had a dream. I got everything I wanted. Not what you think. And if I'm being honest, it might have been a nightmare to anyone who might care. Thought I could fly, so I stepped off the golden. Nobody cried, nobody even noticed. I saw them standing right there. Kinda thought they might care.
Simple but nice, but really the reason I picked this song, this musician, is we get a little bit into talking about homeschooling in this episode. My guest is the wonderful Michael Connell, a very funny man who I've known for a long time, and I think you're really going to enjoy listening to him. We talk about his new baby child, his baby daughter, and how he's considering homeschooling. And I did some research, and I found out that, because it's very easy to make fun of homeschooling and social awkwardness and all that sort of stuff, but I found out that Billie Eilish and her brother, Phineas, were homeschooled. Yeah, obviously she's gone on to great success, but he is her music producer. He makes all her beats and all her sounds, and... The thing that I thought was most funny about their story is, so the brother is older, and the reason that they were homeschooled is because when he was born, Hanson was quite popular, and I believe Hanson were homeschooled as well, or at least, very least as successful musicians, they would have been outside of the traditional schooling structure, so they would have been touring, you're learning on the road. And the father of these kids, not Hanson, of Billy and Phineas, is he saw these kids succeeding, and he saw the untapped potential of untraditional schooling, and so he kept his kids at home and he taught them, and you know, encouraged them, and you know, and this is the result. So, yeah, just some interesting facts for you. We'll get into it, though. It's a good chat. I think you'll enjoy this one. I have some shows coming up in the Wellington Fringe Festival. If you know anyone in Wellington, please send them my way. I know nobody in Wellington, and I will definitely be doing shows in the Comedy Festival. That's confirmed now, but more information about that when I'm allowed to say something. Until then, enjoy the podcast.
As long as I'm here, no one can hurt you. Don't wanna lie here, but you can learn to.
been that fussed about.
No hot mic incident.
No. Or one person came close. One person was like, can I just listen back to it? I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, I don't think it's an issue, but I understand her position because she was like starting to work with CBBC. And we were talking about when we used to work together.
CBBC?
The children's BBC.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, oh, I don't want my professional reputation to be sunk. Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, fair,
I can understand that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was like, I listened back to it. I think it's fine, but give it a run over, see what you think. And she was totally cool with it.
Oh, that's good.
But I totally understand that, you know, it's not worth burning your reputation on on this. Sitting in the car with me.
I'll try and think of what hot button issue I can bring up.
Yeah, like anything really.
Look, I don't have that much. I don't have much of a career to burn, so I'm not that worried. That's the good part about it, you know.
Me, that's why the hosting position is an easy one to be, because I'm just like, who can I destroy today? Like who's on the scene who's better than me that I can destroy? This is how I'm gonna climb up the ladder.
Just take out the competition. Lure them into saying things they shouldn't say.
It's the Me Too the podcast. I'm like, oh, what have you done? Locker room talk. But like, all right, I missed your last show where you were, where you were doing juggling.
Yes.
Maybe we should talk about that for a little bit, because I think that's interesting. How'd you start doing that?
I'll get into that.
Because you were here in Melbourne.
Yes.
So you did the Stoic show.
Yes.
Stoicism.
Yes.
Prior to that, you were doing a bit of harmonica.
Yes.
So it just seems like you're experimenting.
Yeah.
You're like trying some new things and just feeling it out.
Yes.
But
I don't know. I go...
That's the answers we're looking
for. I wish that I had a thing... Like, I'm interested in everything. You know what I mean? I think other comedians are lucky when they're like, I am the whatever. I'm the stoner comedian. I'm going to do an hour about stoner comedy, and then I'm going to do another hour on that, and then the next one you do... You know, whatever.
It does feel like there's label yourself real early.
Yeah, and look, it's great. Establish yourself. It's great for marketing, and I understand the appeal of it, and I would like, I don't know, I'd probably be better off financially if I did that.
I feel that.
I wish I had a thing. This is going to sound wanky, but I am multifaceted, and therefore I'm interested. I'm just interested in a lot of things, and I like learning about stuff and doing different things. I have that much interest in that many things that I would, if I could, just do a different show about a different thing every couple of months, bring it out different, you know, sticking to a theme is hard for me. I did the Stoic philosophy show, and that was really good, and I loved doing it. And when I choose a topic, I try to go all in as much as possible. Because it's hard. It's tough to write an hour of comedy about ancient Greek philosophy, you know? So I had
all the good ancient Greek philosophy jokes just played out.
Oh yeah. So that well's dry. But you know, you have to, so it's a lot of the way I do it, I just take everything in and then just squeeze it down to the funny bits.
It's got to be the key stuff that an audience who might not necessarily be as familiar with Stoicism can still enjoy.
Yeah, exactly. So for like 2 years, I was listening to podcasts, reading books, reading, you know, Wikipedia articles about ancient Greek philosophers. And after about 2 years, by the end of it, probably like 3 years by the end of it, because it took me 2 years to put it together, the then third years I was performing it and, you know, tweaking it and everything. By the end of 3 years, I'd pretty much tapped out, tapped out everything. Or I'd tapped out myself at least.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll get back into it. Maybe it'll be this consuming passion again.
Well, that would be sort of against the
ethos.
Yeah, it would be. It would be. That's, I've learned absolutely nothing is the upshot of this. But yeah, like I want to move on and do different things.
I can respect that. I can respect wanting to do challenge yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
And try something new.
Exactly. And the juggling stuff was interesting because I used to juggle. I was a juggler before I was a comedian.
So that's what I was wondering. Like, yes. Is it something that you wanted to try to learn and this was a good excuse? Or is it a skill that you had that you thought, I could use this?
No, this is, yeah, this is more of a going back and mining an old skill that I had. So I learned to juggle in high school when I was about 13, 14. I taught myself out of a book.
The book was just three pages and it was like, throw this page in the air, throw that page in the air.
Crumble these up, do it yourself. No, it was my parents had like a, they got a book from somewhere like, do your own magic circus.
Yeah.
And it was one of those like 70s books. There was all these kids doing a backyard circus.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
You know, guys with sort big like mutton chops, sort of.
The magic
corduroys.
Equivalent of a women's weekly.
Yeah, like, yeah. Something
your kid's
like that.
Magic party.
Do that, right? Yeah. And they had sections on like, you know, how to do acrobatics with your brother or whatever. And how to make you
so they got
clown
sued
nose.
A lot, I assume. That's why that book isn't produced anymore.
Yeah, exactly. These days they would not. They'd be like, you know, cover yourself in foam rubber and roll around in the park.
And then just sit gently on the floor.
Yeah. Be quiet. Here's the Minecraft app for the circus. But they had like three pages on how to juggle, and I taught myself out of this book. And it was really hard because you're trying to do this physical thing that you're just picturing
from still
in your
pictures?
Mind. From still pictures. So I could get like the basics, but I couldn't get like the final step because it didn't explain that you had to like loop it.
Yeah, right. So that feels like a fundamental part of teaching it.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, throw them in the air, but then start again.
Yeah, dude. They had like, you know, they taught it in like three steps, which is great, but they probably need like...
Six
steps, you know?
Ten?
Just spell it out a bit more.
Yeah,
I was doing this sort of weird juggling sort of thing, semi-juggling, and then I walked down the street and there were all these kids on unicycles.
Because you grew up in a circus?
No, not at all. I was out in the country, right out in the country, but there was all these kids... And I was like, what?
There was no bicycle stores. One guy figured he could double his profits by cutting all the bikes in half.
What's going on? They were all from the Steiner School. The local
Steiner School. A local Steiner School in a country town?
Yeah, out in the Yarra Valley.
Really?
The Little Yarra Steiner School.
Yeah,
I was
right.
going to the mainstream public school.
Right.
And I was like, and they're like, we have a circus school, like an after school
circus
club.
Program. Crazy.
Yeah, it was nuts.
Well, that's who's going to teach you how to juggle then.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
And I was like, can I join? And they were like, well, you're not a student, but I think the kids in the class didn't really want to learn. So
you just need someone who's keen.
So the teacher was like, I'm going to take this kid who's not even going to the school and he's going to shame the others into practicing. So I got very good at juggling in that, like, because he could juggle a bit and he taught me.
Right.
And then they had like, you know, they had the equipment and they had books and videos and stuff. And I learned from that. And the other kids kind of, you know.
Oh, videos. Yeah, good. Moving pictures.
Behind the shelter shed, that sort of thing.
Yep.
Some of them got into it. I'm exaggerating a bit, but...
Well, they rode their unicycles around the back of the shed.
Yeah. Out there drinking on a unicycle. Lighting up
berets on, being like, what is the point?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I did that from like 14 to about 21, 22.
That is a good period to dedicate. Like, that's enough to learn some skills.
Yeah. And really. I was pretty hardcore into it, but very much... When I was doing it in Melbourne in the 90s, it was very numbers juggling. Jugglers are very on that sort of autism spectrum of just obsessively one more ball. And I got into it because I liked performing. Mm. And increasingly, it was just this focus on, just really drilling.
Getting more and more, making it more impressive.
More and more balls. Not even impressive, but impressive to other jugglers.
Yeah, right.
So
I was going to say, to someone who doesn't juggle, because I've tried juggling and I've just never dedicated any proper time to learning it.
Mm.
I've had a lot of free time in like a games hut at a theme park where they had three balls just lying around because and I was just like, all right, this seems the right time. And then it didn't work. I was like, all right, I guess I'm not going to do that. So to someone who doesn't juggle, doing four balls is impressive.
Yeah.
Because three is the understood, like that is how you juggle. Yeah, four, whoa. Yeah, you've clearly dedicated some time to this.
Yeah. But and there's like, and people think, you know, people think four is harder than three and then five is harder than four, which it is. But then you can also have like, you can have really fiendishly difficult three ball tricks that are harder than like five ball tricks. It's not like, and but like, there's tricks that the audience loves. Like, audiences love seeing people eat an apple while they're juggling.
Right.
Yep. That blows people's mind. Every time when you tell people you're a juggler, they're like, oh, can you eat an apple? You're like, yeah, of course. Or they're like, can you juggle with a chainsaw? You're like, probably.
Probably, if I owned three chainsaws that I was just willing to throw around.
Yeah, I could do that, right? The things that jugglers are like, can you do, you know, crazy, they have this thing called like sight swap, so it's like mathematical, almost like sort of an algebra juggling, and they come around, oh, that's a nice 4-4-1 pattern, or that's a great 5-5-5-0 you're running there, and you're like, oh, thanks, man, you know, and it's like
inside juggling.
Yeah, it's really, really niche sort of subculture, and at least when I was doing it, the focus wasn't on making the audience entertained.
So
it was impressing other jugglers and pulling off really difficult feats that other jugglers would go.
It's like extreme juggling.
Or even maybe that's unfair. It's not necessarily other jugglers, just the jugglers themselves were into getting these really arcane, difficult tricks.
Right.
And it's hard to explain, but when you are a juggler yourself, it's like doing a crossword puzzle or something.
Yeah, no.
So right.
There's a method and a rhythm and a pattern.
Yeah.
And once you crack that basic pattern, you try and move up to like harder crossword. Crosswords.
Yes. Exactly. And when you're trying to learn these new patterns or do these new tricks, and when you pull them off, it's that satisfaction of like solving a Rubik's Cube or a jigsaw puzzle, and you're like, oh, great, I've got it. But, which is great, and it's a good hobby, and it's fun for the juggler, but for people watching on the outside, it's like pretty boring.
Yeah, right.
So I sort of got out of it when I was like 22, 23. I started getting into stand-up, and then I was like, oh, this is amazing, because I can just make people laugh.
Yep.
Without, you know, hours and hours of drilling, you know, five ball, you know, half shower or whatever I was working on at the time. And that's the part I liked about juggling, was dropping balls and getting laughs.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, so I gave up, and I wish I had kept it up, because for 10 years I just did nothing at all with juggling. I practically just didn't juggle at all for 10 years. And then only in the last year or two, I got out of I was doing a day job. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is going back like 3 years or so. I got out of a day job and I was like, I want to do something that, you know, is not
off that corporate feeling.
Yeah, not sitting in an office or something. And I'm like, what skill do I have? And I'm like, oh yeah, I could probably do something with the juggling. Yeah, busk or there was a, I remember there was like a guy who came to our school and did like a juggling show or something. And I was like, I bet there's someone else doing that now. So I searched up the company and I said, you know, would you like someone to, you know, help you out if you ever come by? I'll volunteer. And he was like, do you want to come work for the company?
Now.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, all right. So then I got this job going from toured primary schools all over the country teaching kids to juggle. And from that, I really got back into it. And then I was like, it was fun because I was working with kids and teaching them to juggle. But also I started thinking about juggling again. And I thought, like, you see buskers, and there's some amazing buskers. Mm-hmm. There's some buskers out there who are a lot... I'm an okay juggler. There's guys out there who are incredible and much better than me. But sometimes you see buskers and other jugglers and they have the skills, but their comedy, it's the same stock lines. Yeah, they're using the same jokes as other people. And I'm like, you know, I'm a comedian. I've been a comedian for the last 10 years. I can write jokes, yeah. And then I'm like, I also have 10 years of juggling skills from back, you know, when I, in my high school years. Yeah, why don't I put them together and...
Very logical.
Yeah, write some new juggling jokes, probably the first new juggling jokes in like 20, 30 years, you know, you know. So, yeah, that
since
was...
vaudeville.
Well, I mean, there's a guy, Michael Davis. I don't know if you've... He's on YouTube. He in the 80s.
Okay.
He was on Saturday Night Live.
Right, right.
He's hilarious. He's very funny, like one-liner guy.
Yeah.
But now... He was big in the 80s, and now you go around and you see buskers doing his lines everywhere. You know.
He's the archetype.
But he's the archetype. And it, but since him, it's like... I'm sure there are guys out there doing stuff.
Probably a couple, yeah.
But
there's enough fringe. Not circuits.
Much. Yeah, absolutely.
Someone's written a new joke.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. But you just, you know, it's a very, very niche sort of.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, jugglers and who have stand up skills who also can, mm-hmm, you know. And mm-hmm. I also do.
That Venn diagram quite small.
Yeah, exactly. And I also do comedy juggling in a different way. They're all doing stuff that. You know, one line of stuff that works out in the street.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, yeah, if you have an audience that's walking past, it doesn't matter. Whereas I'm more like, I'm at a comedy club. Basically, I'm doing stand up while I juggle some balls at the same time.
Instead of doing five balls, I'm also
saying jokes.
Yeah, exactly.
Keeping this in the air.
Yeah, whoa, and that's the challenge of it.
I don't want to.
But yeah, so I did the juggling show as sort of a challenge to see if I could do it, and it was interesting, and people have liked it, and it's really good, and it's opened me up to new sort of avenues. Like, you know, people want a juggler at the cabaret nights or variety shows.
Just put you in a second tier of performance where you've got a practical visual skill.
Yeah,
that is impressive to. Non-performance.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, you can do two things. Great.
Yeah. I did the show in Perth and actual jugglers came along and they're like, you know, they're like, the juggling wasn't bad, right? It was pretty.
Not what I was expecting.
They're like, it's not, you know, mind-blowing juggling, but they were like, the jokes are really good. So really, right. I'm a comedian who juggles rather than a juggler of comedians, you know?
That's funny.
Give me a second. I'm just going to rip my jumper off.
Yeah, it's gotten a bit warm, right?
Do you want me to open the... I'd open the window, but I worry that noises...
Noise? Should be all right.
But yeah, I am enjoying the juggling show, and it's really good, and I'll do it for a while longer. I'll probably be doing it for ages. I've less focused on the philosophy stuff right now. But I still bring philosophy out the of philosophy jokes every now and again, mix them up. And I'll probably be doing the juggling stuff for years. But I'm sure they'll reach a point where I'll be like, all right, I've done the juggling stuff. What next? And I don't know what that is, but I'll move on to something else.
Yeah, you just got to keep developing an interest in the world.
Yeah.
Like, as long as there's something to look at, like, and something to catch your attention. Because I'm sure at no point were you like, stoicism is for me. Like, I'm going to... Until you heard something and you... Like, just the beginnings of a joke clicked in your brain. And you're like, I think there's something in this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was like... I don't know, it's just something I was very... It's all the things I do in shows, they're all things that I'm very interested in already in my life. And then I'm like... how can I make a show about this?
Can I monetize this?
Therefore, yeah, exactly. How can I... That's basically what I'm doing. How can I make this into a comedy show, therefore giving me an excuse to do this?
To really do it.
Really full on for the next year or two. Yeah, exactly.
This is my life.
Yeah, exactly, right? So, I don't know what it is next. I would...
Then you've got to say, we need two more kids so I can juggle them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
We'll be a family circus. It'll be fine.
I'm so keen. Now that I've got my baby daughter, She's only 6 months, but I keep looking at her thinking, oh, man.
What can I teach you?
Yeah. How can I teach you juggling?
How can I set you on this path way earlier?
Exactly. Because I learned at 14 and then I dropped out. I'm like, man, if I knew how to juggle like the basics at like 6 or 7, oh, man, I'd be on fire, right? You know?
You'd just be like, you've become like a specialized skill person.
Yeah.
It's like you'd be one of those stage mums. It's just putting them in like... Australia's Got Talent and all that. You're like, this is a 2-year-old juggler.
Yeah, I don't want to be one of those. We have to do this, but I can't. It's kind of like, you know, I've got this skill. It's been very good to me.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I want to share that?
Absolutely. Yeah. You wonder how much of it will translate to when you raise a child. You're like, will they take more after me personality wise? Will they take more after their mother personality wise? Are they going to want to perform? Will I encourage that? Will I push them away from it just in case?
Also, it's a weird thing where you're thinking, if I encourage them to do it, will they rebel and not do it?
Yeah, will they become a librarian?
Yeah, exactly. She's going to be like, forget you, Dad. I'm going to be an accountant or whatever. You know, or if I'm like, or if should I do the opposite and go, you're not allowed to juggle like Daddy. And then she'll be like, no, I will. And I'm secretly like, my reverse psychology worked. Yeah, exactly. I don't know what the solution is.
It's a dangerous life, this juggling life. You don't want it.
It's not for you.
Yeah. You'll never do it. You won't make it. That's a great way to go. Just mind game the kid into doing what you want. Right? No, you're not allowed to juggle. You're not allowed to listen to hip hop music. Secretly making a hip hop juggler of my dreams.
You'll be everything I never could be.
Yeah, exactly. Right? If I couldn't become a breakdancing juggler, you can't. She's like, I will. I'll show you, Daddy.
That would be an amazing skill, though.
Yeah, it would be good. Also, I think about I should get her into it because people just love seeing kids
do stuff.
Just do anything, right? She doesn't even have to be good.
You could watch a child do an accountancy job and be like,
that's a child accountant. This is the greatest thing ever.
What? Right.
He's got a tiny suit.
I did some shows. I did a show in Nimbin, and I met a guy who was from a family circus. Like he was an acrobat who had like 3 kids, and his wife was an aerialist. You know, did the trapeze and whatnot. And he was like, because that's who we were. We just started teaching the kids a few tricks.
Oh, I mean, the kids would just be watching them practice and be like,
yeah,
I want to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And he was like, they just naturally take to it. And people go nuts when they see. The kids are good, but, you know, the kids are like 5. They're not doing amazing tricks yet. And he's like, even just like when they're 3, you get them to bring you a juggling ball and people clap and cheer and they give you a lot more money, you know.
Yeah, you're right. It always explodes.
So,
bring a child on stage and they're like, yes.
I'm like, yes.
Anything outside of the arts, child labor, they're like, what are you doing? Inside the arts, suddenly they're like, yes, this is adorable. It's adorable exploitation.
Yeah, that's right. People are like, oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
Oh, their dreams. And people are never like, oh, it's living his dreams of making Nikes. You don't know. Maybe that kid always dreamed of making footwear.
Yeah, family of Nike builders.
Yeah. Nike's built this family.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I always remember being, when I started out in comedy, I would do a lot of, you know, talent quests and, you know, amateur talent comps, that sort of thing. And I'd always come like second place, third place to like some kid, you know, some adorable kid doing whatever. Even, you know, and it used to really grate me because I, you know, I'd either be doing like juggling stuff or I'd do stand up and I'd be like, man, I've worked really hard. And people were like, this guy's great. He's really funny. Yeah. And then I'd be like, yeah, I've got this in the bag. And then some kid would come on, they've dressed, you know, he's 4, they've dressed him in a tux.
Yep.
They just play, you know, Michael Jackson's Thriller or whatever.
Yeah, he just dances.
He just dances badly. And everyone's like, yes! First place of the kid!
It's the same equivalent. I've done some storytelling nights because I've been developing my storytelling skill set. And if you go up, and if anybody else on that storytelling night tells a story about cancer,
yeah,
you're done. You are not winning. Because they can't vote against cancer. They can't be like, your story about being mugged was fun. But, you know, cancer.
Cheryl, your cancer story just lacked emotion. Yeah, I wasn't feeling this horrible ordeal you went through wasn't entertaining enough for me.
Not at all.
I got to tell you.
It lacked a... Where was the laughs?
Yeah. Felt it really suffered in the middle. You know?
Well, yeah, so did I.
Brutal.
Yeah. That's sort of, like, if you can sort of get a feeling of what's... Of, you're like, all right, cool, I'm done. Yeah. Hopefully I'll get second. So I feel like they've got to put them in their own category. Yeah. Like, this is the cancer storytelling night.
Yeah.
So they've got to go up against each other.
Well, I guess you got to use what you got.
If you've gone
through that, you're like,
you
well,
absolutely would.
One
yeah,
of
right?
the upsides is that I'm going to win all these
I'm
storytelling
smash
nights.
Smash this out. I'm yeah. going to be a story slam master.
If you've got a kid, you got to enter them into as many talent contests as they can till they're not cute anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just ride that. It's like, you know, when you get... Mm. My younger brother and sister... For a very small window, did a little bit of like magazine photos. Like it wasn't for anything major.
Yeah,
I don't even remember. The main reason I remember is because I've seen the photos around the house so many times. Yeah, and I was like, these are not clothes that they ever wore. These were just some really weird, random. But they were at that like right age where they wanted to do. They wanted kids to promote their kids brand and all that sort of stuff. And I don't even know how they got involved. Maybe my parents knew them. Because they both danced at some point, so it was probably through that. So that just became... There was like this real tiny gap of them going, photos, and we're done. Just like, I don't know if they grew out of it, or if they were just...
They were either like, no more, this is embarrassing, or the photographer's like, nah.
They don't have it anymore.
Puberty's kicking in. Bit too many pimples. Not looking good for the brand.
No, yeah, it's not what we're all about.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, our baby is super cute. And, like, I don't know, I assume every parent thinks their kid's the most beautiful kid,
of
right?
Course, yeah.
But, so I'm trying to be objective about it, and I think, you know, she's probably just quite cute. But we go out, you know, down the street, and people are stopping, and like, oh, she's so cute, oh, she's adorable, oh, she's wonderful. And I'm like, maybe I could be exploiting this and getting her on the face of, you know, some baby food bottle or something.
Put some money in like a little account for her when she's 18 and be like, there you go.
The downside, the only problem at the moment is she has, she's super active, but she hasn't learned to crawl yet. So she just likes rubbing her head on the bed. She has shined up a bald patch. She's rubbed the hair off.
That's
the
amazing.
It's a very common thing for babies to have.
Oh, right.
But she does look a bit
like a blanket or a hand over that spot.
Yeah, exactly. Or her just lying when she's asleep in bed, just goes and rubs her head back and forth.
Amazing.
And it's literally like a shiny
the bowling ball.
Yeah, bowling ball. Back, like, she looks like a monk or something, almost. Just shave it in there.
Her in an art school or a Steiner school or anything. She can just join a monastery. Yeah, she's got the look already.
Just go straight in. Yeah. The only baby food she's going to be advertising is like papal choice or something. Some sort of, I don't know, monk brand.
Yeah, like
Rusks.
Version of Quaker's Oats or something.
Something, I don't know.
Baby's first Quaker's Oats.
Maybe, you know, hair in a can for babies. When they bring out that product, you can get in there.
Done. Don't worry about this embarrassing little moment. You could invent that. That could be you. That could be, great endeavor.
Invent my own product and then get my baby to advertise it.
Yeah, you'd be like, well, I had this problem.
Yeah, why not?
No more. Do you think you would send your little one to a Steiner school? Like, given that you've seen the benefit that you sort of got from it.
It's hard.
It's a big decision.
It is a tough decision. I honestly don't know what to do about educating my kid.
Mm.
And having a kid makes you really think about this, which I haven't even...
I mean,
I have not thought about it schooling since I left school.
6 months in, and you shouldn't be.
No, you have to, because like now you got to be getting kids on waiting lists signing them up for things. And what are we going to do? I don't know. I remember when I was a kid, and I remember Steiner. I had some friends in the public school who had left the Steiner school because they were like, Steiner school did not work for them.
Well, it's such
they weren't
a niche
learning
model.
But then I had other friends who left the public school and went to the Steiner school, and it works great for them. So I don't know.
I guess it comes down to what, because there's a lot of talk about this. I've heard a lot of podcasts that talk about this sort of stuff, where you've got to try and tailor an education towards the type of child rather than trying to put a child into stock standard education.
Yeah.
And it's quite hard to know how early to start making those decisions. Mm. One mother was on the podcast. She's got like three kids. And she, to boil it down to its simplest, because I can't remember all the details, they had all different goals. And she had to figure out, as a mum, she had to sort of figure out how to motivate them, how to guide them a little bit. So essentially like manage them. One wants to go into drawing, like illustration. So she's got to end up going to, I think it's UCLA or wherever it is that the Pixar guys started out. And like that big famous studio there. And that's a big expensive endeavor. And she's like, all right, well, if you really want to do this, we need to start saving now. We need to start figuring this out. And we need to figure out what the paths are, how you're going to develop your skills. There was one who just wanted a real simple existence, and one wanted to go into something more, not like illustration, but more performance-based.
Yeah.
And so she sort of had to tailor each of their educations towards that child.
Yeah.
And I think that's real strong dedication. And that for her to recognize that early on and be like, all right, the only way I'm going to motivate my children is if they're working towards a goal, and I've got to figure out what their goals are and help them.
Yeah.
Just like real hands-on helping them.
Yeah.
Which I think was really impressive.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to go. Think about what the kid needs.
Mm.
And I don't know, as now that I've got a kid, like me and my wife, we're constantly talking about school and what's our school experience.
Yeah, that's
interesting.
And
you forget
how awful?
Crap.
How awful.
How crap school was. I'm leaning towards homeschooling.
Interesting.
Because, like, I don't know. Sometimes...
Were either of you homeschooled? I don't mean to pry.
No. I wasn't homeschooled. My wife wasn't homeschooled. Okay. I mean, there was a time I was bullied very badly in high school, and my family talked about homeschooling, but we never really followed through with it.
It was more of a, like, this is an option.
Yeah, exactly. And
you can hang out with mom.
And But at the time...
It was a way to scare you back to school.
Yeah. I was like, all right, I'll do better. I'll figure something out. Maybe we'll take karate classes. Right. But, I think in the 90s, you know, before the internet, homeschooling was really tough.
Yeah, that's dedication.
Yeah.
Like,
but now, I think, like, you know, I learned so much from like YouTube,
but
and like Khan Academy and all that sort of stuff.
I agree with you, but you've got to have a parent who knows how to research.
Well,
otherwise they end up on all the wrong sources. They teach you bad information. You know what I mean?
I suppose.
So you as a person, then, you've learned how to research.
Yes.
And you've learned how to like filter.
Yes.
What you've.
But how did I learn that? I wasn't taught that.
We sort of grew up with it, I think.
Yeah, I suppose
like
I
when,
grew up with the internet
when
and
was,
figured it out.
Yeah, when was the internet first introduced to your home? Roughly, age-wise.
98, 99,
so that's,
when I was about probably like 12, 13.
Yeah, so that's like prime developmental years. So you start to explore and you start to sort of get used to the language of the internet. And then I think we're in a weirdly privileged position of having lived without it just enough to have developed a sense of what it can and can't be problematic for.
Yeah.
Because we've lived through the first wave of the major cyberbullying, the major privacy issues that people were really worried about, and then seeing a generation come out from under us being like, is it that bad?
Yeah.
And we're like, that's a good question, is it?
Yeah.
Like, we don't know. But I feel like we're in a roughly privileged position of having viewed the world without it.
Yeah.
And having seen what major benefits can come from.
Yeah. Like, my kid will never know a world without the internet.
No way.
She'll have no idea what that was like.
Yeah, it'll be
not being able to get access to information or just having to look things up in the library and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
learning
absolutely.
How to reference.
Yeah, exactly, you know? But yeah, I don't know. I think with the internet, with all the resources out there, maybe it's not hard. Or not, I'm sure as I can feel all these homeschoolers go, what
are you even saying?
Right now, but like, I think, oh man, do I have time to homeschool my kid?
That's a good question.
But then I think, because I think, oh, kids are in school, you know, 6 hours a day, 5 days a week. But then I think about, what did I do in school? I learned a bit of reading, learned a bit of math, but like 90% of it was sitting down, waiting in line, answering roll call, just all this
assembly,
all this useless stuff.
Learning school songs.
Yeah, I like my wife's sister is a teacher,
right?
And I go, how much is teaching versus like discipline control? And she's like, it's like 80% disciplining children, getting children to pay attention, getting children to face the front. Then, if she's lucky, she'll get a little English in there, you know? So I'm like, maybe if I'm only handling one kid, you know, I can just get her to focus and teach her that. And plus, you know, some of the things they teach in school, the useless stuff that they waste time with. I'm like, hey, rather than learning the school song and going to assembly, maybe we can focus on, you know, how to do your tax return or write an invoice. Yeah. Like, that was something that was never taught to me in high school. You
valuable
know?
Skills.
Hey, you know, here's some lessons on why getting a credit card is a possibly bad idea.
Yep. Yeah. You know? We can genuinely teach you, like, this is the banks. This is the history of the banks. This is what they've done.
Yeah.
This is why they're terrible.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I don't know, like we were joking before about child labor.
Yeah.
And like people say it's bad for kids to work, right? But like, I don't know, doesn't it depend on the work? Like if they're helping in a business, like I think about what I've learned in my life. I learned a little bit in school.
There's not a single milk bar that I've been to that didn't have a kid behind the counter.
Yeah. Like that's like some people say that and they go, oh, they're exploiting the kid, but the kid's learning like how to talk to strangers, how to conduct business, you know, even just like simple things like addition, subtraction, you know.
Mm.
All that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Consequences.
Like, consequences, responsibility. Mm-hmm. Maybe I could just do things like that.
You can start a family business.
Yeah.
You start a milk
in
bar.
Start the circus. She can keep. She can count. Invoices. She can do the invoices. She can keep track of how many balls we're juggling. Plan the tour. Yeah. Negotiate the hotel room. You know, that sort of thing, you know? I don't know.
Planning the tour would be a good skill to have.
Yeah.
Producing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, what's that? You want me to hire a producer? No, I'm going to make one.
Just make my own producers.
I'll make my own producer, thank you.
My assistant.
But, I don't know. Because when I did the tour of primary schools, it was kind of sad because you see little kids come into the school and that, you know, the little preppies, the little year one kids, and they're all like bright eyed and all excited. And then by about, and the teachers are all like, you know, Billy, look at me, sit down, hands to yourself. And they just scream at the kids for an hour. And then by like grade 4 or 5, they're all lining up in neat rows. Like it, you know, I'm sure schools teach good things, but they also teach a lot of, you know, conformity, obeying authority, you know, that sort of stuff, which I'm like, I don't know if I want my kid to learn that sort of stuff, you know? I think she should, you know, question authority. She should
have a
reason for herself.
Yeah, have the mindset to be aware to question.
Yeah.
When is good to question.
And yeah. And like people say, oh, you know, homeschooling, it's bad because she'll
it's an easy punchline.
Yeah, it's an easy punchline. Because some people, I did know a few homeschoolers when I was growing up. And you can do it a couple of ways. I've known some homeschoolers who are like, we're homeschooling our kid because we want to give her the best opportunities in the world and we feel we can teach her really good things. And then I've known other people who are like, we're homeschooling our kids because I'm too lazy to drive to school.
Yeah.
I don't want to structure them in any way or be involved. Early. I don't want to get up early. So you can totally have bad reasons for being a homeschooler, yeah. You know, or I want to indoctrinate them with some crazy ideas
right,
or whatever.
Yeah. I'm prepping for the apocalypse.
Yeah, I'm prepping for the apocalypse.
Need to teach my child how to dig a ditch.
Yeah.
Build a bunker.
Signal the aliens to come in, you know. How to defend themselves against the Illuminati or whatever they got planned. So you can totally be abused like anything, but like, yeah, I don't know. I don't want them. I feel like if you have the right attitude, the right reasoning, maybe it'd be a good thing.
Yeah, and I guess if you're open to the idea that, so if you start it, and then you realize they aren't learning.
Yeah,
then, if you're open to change.
Totally. And if she's 12 and can't read or write, then
done a bad job, yeah.
I'm going to throw in the towel and, start sending her to a proper school.
Still on spot at 12.
Yeah, exactly.
Still can't find spot.
Yeah. You know? And, like, I people say, oh, you know, the kids don't get socialized and they need to... You learn things at school that you can't learn at home. But the socialization thing, I was coming home with like PTSD. You know?
Yeah, right.
I was learning how to, you know, be a little savage to other little savages.
Yeah. That
you know, totally do without that.
You first learn to defend yourself by attacking back.
Yeah.
So someone will say something to you, and I was an easy target because I had red hair.
Yeah.
So you just got to learn to like spit back at people.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. High school's like prison for children.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it teaches them, it does teach them to socialize, but not in a good way.
It's like a defensive socialism.
Yeah, absolutely. And it teaches you to form groups and gangs for protection. And it teaches you to, you know, attack people who are weaker than you and, you know, all these horrible things. And also it's like, in the larger scheme of things, you know, we're saying, like, you have to go to this school. You're forced. You know, it's this compulsory side of things. Shouldn't learning and education be, you know,
fun.
A choice, fun thing that they want to do?
They should want to seek knowledge because so many people come out of education being like, never again.
Yeah, exactly.
I will never learn another thing.
Yeah, so many people are like, great, I'm done with schooling. Never have to learn again. I am, and you're like, that is so sad.
That's the most depressing thing is when I hear people be like, I'm so glad I never have to learn another thing. What do you mean?
Like,
you're not complete.
I guess you don't have to.
But like, don't you want to? Like, an impulse inside you to be like, this is interesting. I'll read about this. And just those little things.
Yeah, I never want... I don't know. I assume she's very interested in learning things. She's only 6 months.
She's always
looking around
interested
and
in seeing.
Putting things in her mouth to see what they taste like.
Well, yeah, and that's the fundamental learning skill.
Yeah, exactly.
The kid's first learning skill is, what's this?
Yeah, exactly. So I assume she has that drive to learn. Mm. I don't want to see it crushed by school.
I understand that. What is the... And you might not have researched this, but I don't actually know what the answer is. What is the governmental requirements in terms of if you're going to homeschool your child? Because there's certain, like, you know, there's expectations that you will enlist.
Yeah, I honestly don't know.
Interesting.
I've not looked this up. I know... Oh, I think in Australia, there's certain... curriculum like,
you'd have to hit certain things because the mandatory stuff things. Maths, English, maybe some science, I don't know. Get some Bunsen burners, you'll be fine.
Exactly.
Got mashes, we're all right. But that's I'm curious about that, like what are the restrictions that they put in place for
and how do they test it?
Yeah.
I don't know these things.
That's interesting. Which might be worth Googling later. Yeah. Like, just for my own curiosity, just to be like, what are the restrictions? Like, yeah. How do you get around that mandatory requirement that a child be enrolled in a school?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of people do.
Obviously, you can homeschool, and but you have to, I think you have to register. Or
probably,
something.
Yeah.
It's probably...
You become incorporated.
Yeah, exactly. set get an ABN. You're setting up a business. Yeah. It's weird that we do that, but, you know, I guess that's what we do.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of it is out of that, like, past of kids need to be somewhere while parents work. We'll put that time to use, you know, teaching them to be good citizens, teaching them to be good students by, we'll give them fundamentals and teach them how to behave.
But it's that make them good citizens thing. Yeah. People always think of, oh, you know, it's free school. And you're like, yeah, I guess you're getting free school. I mean, you're paying taxes for it. But you're getting free school. But the catch is they're teaching your kids what they want them to learn.
Sure.
You know? So it's very, it gets back to that teach them compliance, obeying authority sort of thing.
Well, I have heard teachers.
It comes at a price. Yeah, they'll teach a kid maths, but they'll also teach them to, you know, salute the flag and stand in line and whatever. Yeah.
Well, we didn't have so much of that, but I know that's a big American thing, is Pledge of Allegiance every day.
And did you sing the national anthem when you were in primary school, high school?
I feel like there was moments of it.
Mm.
Maybe at an assembly, but I don't think that was every day.
I sung the national anthem at school assembly. In primary school, at least once a week.
Once a week. You don't even.
I
sing
would
it
even
that
say.
Often. I reckon you'd get it. You'd probably hear it twice a year as an adult.
Yeah. Very, very rarely. Like, Australia really isn't like America in the flag waving at start of every ball game,
like
sort of
the grand
stand
final.
And
yeah, and that's if you're at the grand final.
Yeah, exactly. They're even on. Yeah, the TV studios are like, let's just cut this for time.
Yeah. You know, yeah. we could just
patriotism's boring. let's edit this out, right? but we were. I don't know if it was my school alone or
you said you were at a country school.
Yeah, I was. I'm in the country.
Like that's a quality of. Like, country teaching? Or do you think that's
not
just...
Not particularly.
Like, was there a...
Because the area I grew up in was... Yeah, it was country. There were a lot of, you know, farmers. Mm. But there was also a lot of sea changers, tree changers, hippie sort of people. So it wasn't like a super conservative sort of area where they were like... We're going to get these kids saluting the flag. I think it's just I think my instinct was some teacher was like, we've got to fill time in assembly and just, this is a good way to do it. Yeah, exactly. How old are you?
I'm 35.
35? Yeah, so we're only a year apart. Yeah. We would have been going to school at the same time. Yeah. Mm, weird.
Yeah,
right.
I don't know that it was that frequent in my schooling. I remember it happening.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember more being... worried about having to do like, because I never used to do like performance stuff at school.
Yeah.
So I remember more being worried about having to do like some sort of interview concert or something. That was my biggest worry.
Oh, imagine that. Imagine if you ended up being a performer for a young you. Oh, man.
Yeah. Would never have pictured it. There's a photo that I don't know if it still exists at my primary school of a group that I was in doing like a song and dance to a Blues Brothers song.
Yeah.
And I know exactly where I am. I am directly in line with the person in front of me, hiding behind them so that people can't see me.
Out of the line of sight.
Yeah. But
clever.
The photo is like on a slight angle. So I'm probably in there somewhere, but from an audience perspective, I am blocked.
Genius. I have a remember of dancing to Shake Your Tail Feather from the Blues Brothers at some school performance, and
I think like it's
just being filled with shame at having to, having to, you know, the shake your tail feather, you had to put your hands together and pretend that it was a tail feather and bend over like that. And I was like, hundreds of people are looking at my bottom right now. This is
not what I signed up for.
This is weird.
I will exactly. not let my child go through this.
Yeah. I just want to protect her now.
Yeah. I feel like that's we found the root cause of the desire to homeschool.
I don't want to make her a better person. I just don't want her to go through that. Yeah, exactly. I don't want to dance to the Blues Brothers soundtrack. Can't do it.
Oh, dear.
All right.
Let's pause here.
Yeah, sure.
Grab some water. I might take my jacket
off. Yeah, absolutely.
We're back from our little break.
Hey.
A bit of a chat, some water. So
we're
going to the second part of this, where
yes.
generally it is consistent of us just.
We've brought you on because we think you're someone that people should know about. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's the general philosophy of the podcast is sort of paying forward to someone that we think we like, that people should know, and so we want to know who you think people should know. As well, because right. you know, everyone's got a little influence or someone that they like, or their niche little comic that they're like, more people need to know about that yeah. person. And the easiest way we've found to do that is to play samples of people's stuff.
Yeah.
So that the audience can hear and, you know, they might take an interest in it or whatever, or they might check out that yeah. person if they come around. So we've got one prepared because
yeah.
I can't hold you too long because you've got a child. Oh. And, maybe we'll start with
yeah,
you,
sure.
You've made a suggestion for a comic yeah. that you like.
I love Brian Regan. He is hilarious. I'm saying this like he's unknown. He is huge.
But that thing
he's
said,
huge in comedy. Comedians know him.
Yeah.
And he's massive in America. He tours all over. But he never leaves America. If anyone connects with Brian Regan is listening, send him to Australia because people would love him in Australia.
He'd probably sell out.
Yeah.
So when John Oliver toured,
mm.
I was at work talking to people. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm seeing John Oliver in a couple of days.
Yeah.
And this was post Last Week Tonight.
Right.
And I had people at my work being like, who's that? Who's yeah. John Oliver?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
see, like, comedy is such, when you're a comedian, you forget it's such a niche thing, you know? Like, you talk to people on the street, they'll know, like, Dave Hughes, they'll know Will Anderson, you know, a couple of guys of that level.
Jackie O. And you're like, it's not the same thing.
You're like, not really. but, like, you know, they'll know Seinfeld because they've seen him on TV. But like,
yeah, that very much is people's barometer, isn't
but
it?
But that's it, you know. Like, they could, like most people, I don't think they could name five comedians.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know?
That's
and
fair.
Like
prior to going into comedy,
yeah, it's so it's weird because you forget it's. You think everyone's? I think everyone's like got it, this encyclopedic knowledge of stand up over the last 50 years.
Well, that's where I think the UK does it well, because they have panel shows.
Yeah.
So you can just bring people in. So the host, let's say the host has producer powers.
Yeah.
Probably not. But let's say the host has producer powers and they can be like, I like these five comics.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's bring them in.
Yeah.
And we'll have some fun with them.
Yeah.
Like Jimmy Carr's got a...
They build a profile. Yeah. That guy's on this panel show and then you see him on another panel show. And then TV is just... In the UK, it's just chock full of panel shows.
Absolutely.
They're like, oh, you know, Noel Fielding.
He's yeah,
on
he's,
all
he's everywhere,
these four different shows. I remember him from that show. Mm-hmm. And he was it's that guy with the long... And they get to know him. Here, it's like, yeah, I suppose.
If you manage to get in with Rove in the day, like, and if you're in, like, his inner circle in the day, people will probably know who you are now.
Like, people back in the day, people knew Rove, and they might have been able to name Peter Hellier.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and you'd be lucky if anyone was like, Corinne Grant?
Yeah, Corinne Grant, people would know, you know, because she was always on, and like, yeah, increasingly, it's just, that's not a thing.
Yeah, despite how much the ABC recently has been putting into comedy, it is incredible how few, given that we have the biggest, probably most renowned comedy festival, specifically comedy festival.
It's the third largest in the world.
Mm. Um, in in the world is it's amazing how few people, like when you're out flyering and people are like, oh, I saw the comedy festival last night. All of it?
Yeah, all of it, yes.
All 700 shows, including the one
I
watched
the comedy festival. And there's a little more than the gala, but that's fine. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I'm constantly shocked at that when you live in Melbourne and you say, have you gone to the comedy festival? They're like, no, but we watch it on TV every year. Yeah. And you're like, wow, you've never left the house to see a live
show. We do some of these live.
It's crazy.
And
it's the way it is.
Occasionally, we'll do them like partway through. So people will have already started, but people will have time to promote a show that's coming up.
Yeah.
So we sort of purposely bank them in the middle of the festival. And there'll be people who will come in and we're doing like third week shows. And they're like, this is the first thing we've seen. I'm like, what? How? You've missed a bunch of really good stuff.
Yeah, and it's...
I mean, I'm always glad that they come.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm delighted when people come to comedy for the first time or they go out and say, it's amazing. But I'm just like, I'm constantly staggered at how hard it is to get people to leave the house or pay attention to things beyond what's going on in their life. Like, the Melbourne Comedy Festival gets, what is it, $4 million a year from the state government? Yeah. To advertise and promote the festival. And they put millions and millions of dollars, and people are still vaguely aware that Melbourne has a comedy festival.
And if you're not doing comedy festival as a comedian, if you're doing Fringe, you're sunk.
Yeah.
Nobody knows. Yeah. My partner lived in the suburb where the comedy festival used to happen for her entire life and had never heard of the Fringe Festival. She was like, the what?
The what? No.
I think I've introduced more people to the Fringe Festival through doing it than they have through putting it on.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's so hard to get people to know about stuff.
Mm.
But yeah, this is my favorite thing is Brian Regan. He's amazing, and I want more people to know about
him. Yeah, right.
He's just really funny, and he does stuff. It's not necessarily he's choosing amazing topics or things that have never been talked about before, but just the stuff he does is just so, I don't know, well crafted, and it's just so accessible. When I meet people who are like, I've never listened to stand up, or I don't like, I play them like his CD, Brian Regan Live, because I think everyone,
it's very accessible.
Yeah, everyone can enjoy that. Like, it's a great like intro to stand up. It's like for me, it's like the classic album.
Yeah,
you know. All right. I just love it. Right. Anyway, so just because today we were talking about school, I thought this bit would be really good because, he talks about his time in school and just like, you listen and you're like, that was me. All right,
let's play this one and then we can chat.
I don't know. I'd be a lot better off if I would have studied more when I was growing up, you know? But you know where it all went wrong was the day they started the spelling bee. Because up until that day, I was an idiot, but nobody else knew, you know? And the spelling bee day, you know, popped up. All right, kids, up against a wall. It's time for public humiliation. Spell a word wrong, sit down in front of your friends. You know, that's great for little egos. Hey, look at me, I'm a moron. I wasn't even close. I was using numbers and stuff. That's why I admired that kid who spelled it wrong on purpose so he could sit down, you know? He knew he wasn't going to win, so why stand there for 3 hours? First round, cat, K-A-T, I'm out of here. Then as he passed you, I know there's two T's. I remember my teacher asked me, Brian, what's the I before E rule? I before E, always. What are you, an idiot, Brian? Well, apparently. So she explains it. No, Brian, it's I before E, except after C, and when sounding like A, as a neighbor in way, and on weekends and holidays and all throughout May, and you'll always be wrong no matter what you say. That's a hard rule. That's a rough rule. Plurals were hard, too. Brian, how do you make a word a plural? You put an S. You put an S at the end of it. When? On weekends and holidays. And... No, Brian, no, let me show you. So she asked this kid who knew everything, Irwin, what is he plural for ox? Oxen. The farmer used his oxen. Brian, what? Brian, what's the plural for box? Boxing. I bought 2 boxing of donuts. No, Brian, no. Let's try another one. Irwin, what is he plural for goose? Geese. I saw a flock of geese. Brian, what? Brian, what's the plural for moose? Moosin'. I saw a flock of moosin'. There are many of them, many much moosin'. Out in the woods, in the wooders, in the woodsin'. The meat's wanting the food. Food is the eating, is it? The meat's wanting the food and in the wooding, is it? And the food in the wooding, is it? Brian. You're an imbecile. Imbecilin. What, are you speaking German, Brian? German. Germaine. Jackson. Jackson 5. Tito. Brian, what the hell are you talking about? Oh, no. Oh, no, really. I think the worst day was the day the science project was due. Waking up that morning, that was fun, huh? Yeah. Your head had pop off your pillow. Oh, no. That's due today. I had 9 months to work on and I did nothing. I have a cardboard box. Of boxing. And you'd show up, you're scared because you don't have anything good, and you find out all the other kids, their parents made theirs for them. I hated that, you know? They're backing them in on flatbed trucks. One kid with a volcano. He didn't have to zip up his own pants, but he built a volcano. You had to swing that. I don't know what to do for my project, so I brought in a paper cup filled with dirt, just hoping she'd know I'm an idiot and just walk right on past me. Just as long as I was holding something. You know, what do you have there, Brian? It's a cup of dirt. Just put an F on there and let me go home. We'll explain it. Well, it's a cup with dirt in it. I call it cup of dirt. You should move on now. You should go ahead and move on. Head on down the line here. So she went to this one kid. There was a kid in my class. He made the same solar system like 19 years in a row, you know? Bunch of styrofoam balls held together with coat hangers. Hey, you're breaking some new ground there, Copernicus. He's going, the big yellow one's the sun. The yellow one is the sun. Okay, all right, what are these other planets? The big yellow one is the sun. All right, calm down. The one, all right!
That was amazing. So many excellent choices. Like, learning that plurals bit must have been just an exercise in and of itself. Just the thought process that would have gone into what is the obvious wrong answer, how do I make this, but how do I shape this?
Yeah.
Like,
and the second one, when it's boxing, yeah. you think it's going to be like, you think it's going to be geese and moose. Yeah. It's going to be meese, but it's moosin'.
Yeah, which is brilliant. that just must have been.
It was great.
Months of shaping, picking the right word, taking something out.
And it's so dense, you know? It's funny even in bits that are just basically setups, where, like, just the bit where his head pops off the pillow. Oh, no. Yes. Just like...
Yeah. And that's a sensation we all know.
We all know. You can relate. You're like, oh, no. You've all had that.
I still do that.
That feeling. Yeah, 100%. Oh, I think about that so much. And the way he says it all is, you just got to really, really, like... It's a very way of talking. Use of language. So economical, right? There's not a word in there that he doesn't need, but it also doesn't. It feels natural. Yes, it doesn't feel
conversational.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, it doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel like I'm leading you directly to I'm forcing you to come down this road to a punchline. Feels like I could have come up with this. If I was saying this to a friend, it just flows.
Yeah.
It just feels like a real flowy.
But at the same time, he's not saying anything that couldn't, that doesn't lead to a laugh.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
It's incredible. I don't know.
It's an incredible use of the form.
And it's so relatable, so accessible.
Most of us have been that.
Pure comedy. I just love it. Mm. Yeah. And I sometimes... So he's my hero because sometimes I'm doing here's my jokes about Bitcoin, you know. People are like, that's funny, but I have no idea what you're talking about.
Like, I know that Bitcoin is weird, so I'm going to laugh.
Yes, right? Yeah. He doesn't have to explain anything. He doesn't have to set it up. You're instantly there with him. And
You dropped straight into a scenario where amazing. You're like, it's like quantum leaping into... your own life. Yeah. You know what I mean? You're like, oh, I'm familiar with this.
Yeah.
I don't have to learn anything new. Like, there's no setup of educational points.
Yeah.
Which...
just bam, bam, bam. Just punches. Just incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Loved it.
That's a good choice, really.
Oh, thank you.
I feel like people should get behind that. I've got, funnily enough, the guy that I picked, I didn't realize we'd be going down similar roads. The piece is called Baby CPR.
CPR.
So he's doing he's in a CPR class for babies.
All right.
Yeah. So
who's this?
His name's Cy. Let me get the last name right. Amundsen.
All right.
I only know him because he did This Is Not Happening. It's just a storytelling show. Yeah. And
Ari Shafir's thing.
Yeah. Well, formerly.
Or was. Yeah.
So he did an amazing story about taking a bus trip cross country. Which speaks to me a lot because I'm doing a piece about doing a bus trip across country in America as well at the moment. His style sort of stuck with me because I feel like he's... the way he tells the story, even though it's quite animated and quite exaggerated, not even necessarily quite exaggerated, but he knows which bits to sort of pull up and which bits to sort of sit down a little bit. And I feel like he's just got a good... It's a good manic energy, but without being aggressive. I was listening to a couple of other things today just because I was just listening to some stuff. And I was like, this one particular guy, he's got good ideas, but his voice is too aggressive and I don't like he comes off as attacking rather than as critiquing.
Mm.
Whereas this guy, even though wild things are happening, it never comes off as like, I feel like I'm better than what's going on. He's just sort of like taking in the world and responding to it. Probably more taking his internal voice and making it external. So because like whether or not his responses, like with every comedian, like, did you actually say that?
Yeah.
But you know, it doesn't feel aggressive even in that, like when you're hearing it and you're like, oh, there's a confrontation, but it doesn't feel aggressive.
Right.
So we'll just play it and you can see what I think.
Yeah.
32 years old. This year I got kicked out of a baby CPR class. Fun follow-up information, I have never had a baby. My sister was pregnant, so she insisted that I take baby CPR. I asked if she'd taken it. She had not. That is, apparently, neither here nor there. So I took a class on how to save a baby's life, and somehow the teacher managed to take it too seriously. Sounds difficult, right? I'm gonna keep going. I was in class, first day of class. Heads up, I was the only single uncle in class. Ever want to know what it feels like to have a room full of strangers think you might maybe be a predator? Go on, give single uncle at baby CPR a twirl. So I'm sitting in class, feeling judged. Teacher walks in, he goes, hello. We turn, we see him. He's at the front of the class, and in his right hand, he's holding a rubber baby doll. He looks at us for a minute, then takes a big step and flings the baby doll across the classroom at me. Now I catch it, just barely, and then he goes, the baby's airway is blocked. You have 30 seconds before the child has irreversible brain damage. Go. And I was like, wait, what? And then he started counting. 29, 28, 27. And for 26 some odd seconds, I was like, wait, no, what? He goes, 2, 1, hurt. Now, do you still think choking hazards for infants aren't a big deal? No, I chose to take this class. These aren't court-ordered baby CPR classes. I didn't get arrested breaking into a daycare, handing off Legos wrapped in Laffy Taffys to babies, and just peacing out. I am here on purpose. He goes, we just need you to take this class seriously. That's fine. But you want me to treat this like it's a real baby, but then are we also just going to gloss over the fact that you just fucking Joe Montana'd it across the room, neck all wibbly and wobbly and shit? I don't think I have to save this baby's life. I'm pretty sure it passed away during the Hail Mary there, Peyton Manning. I might not know how to save a choking child. At least my strategy isn't grip it and rip it. He goes, are you mocking my class? I was like, I thought that was super obvious. It's baby CPR, not scared straight. Let's say we dial it down a few notches, eh, T-Bone? He goes, you're out of here. Like he's some weird baby CPR umpire. Like, you're out of here. And he threw me out. And I am not going back. Just watch a YouTube video on baby CPR and hope shit pans out. I do hope they let that guy teach all the classes, though. Because if nothing else, he understands how to motivate through fear. Just give him all the community ed classes. Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to Driver's Education. There is a house 5 miles from here. I left a baby in the basement and set the house on fire. Drive, teenager, drive. Every cone has another preemie infant inside of it. Swerve, 14-year-old. Hey guys, thanks for coming to Gardening 101. Today we're gonna learn how to plant a hibiscus. I buried an infant beneath this garden bed. There's 15 seconds left in its air pocket. You better start digging or there's gonna be a tiny funeral up in this bitch and it's gonna be all your fault, Carol. Start fucking digging.
That was great.
Yeah, it's a good bit, right?
Really good.
Yeah.
I always love bits like that one where he goes, the line, that was neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Like, because your mind's piecing together the argument that he's had with his sister, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that was so good.
It's just enough information for you to fill it in.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I've been in that argument.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that's what I've sort of enjoyed about stuff that I've heard from him, and like especially that big storyteller show, is he's the bits that he chooses to emphasize. You're like, that, yep, that's an important detail, and that's how you've wound up in this situation. And so you've just learnt the key fundamentals of storytelling, essentially, of bringing someone on the journey to the logical conclusion, which he set up nicely at the end by just opening with, I got kicked out of baby CPR, so we're like, all right, cool. How did we get here?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah, it was great. It was a little journey, and then he got to the end of it. He was kicked out, and then he took it.
There was nice little
observational stuff at the end. He's like, oh, you know, imagine him doing it in other classes and stuff. Yeah, it was a really good bit. That was cool.
Yeah, I think it was
what was his name? Cy Amundsen.
Amundsen. Yeah. But yeah, there's some really nice stuff out there. If anyone wants to check out his, this is not happening, but he really shines because it's 15 minutes of storytelling. So he just gets to really indulge in the story and in the environment and the key details that get brought out, which all sort of come into play, which is just a really fun piece.
Nice.
So I feel like he's got a lot of skill in that. Like, he's using that muscle to help emphasize the observational side of it, which is like, if he had just tried to talk about this guy who was over exaggerating in the class or who was too intense for the class and then went straight into the examples, you'd be like, yeah. This premise is weak, or this premise, I don't know, it reeks of falseness. But because he took you on that journey, you're like, yeah, I'm on board, I'm on your side,
yeah.
Even if you're not necessarily in the right,
yeah,
because you were like fighting back, I'm still on your side. Yeah.
You relate to it. You're like, oh, yeah, he's the protagonist. Now he's me. This yes. is how I yeah. would be in this. Yeah, totally. Yeah, that was a good bit.
Yeah, no, I've quite enjoyed it. One of the pleasures of doing this podcast is that I'm forced to seek new names and new comedy. Because, you know, obviously I can't be showing up here every episode being like, here's this guy again.
Jerry Seinfeld. Once again.
Young up and coming.
So it puts me in a nice, unique position of learning and evolving and adapting and sort of taking in new information and new comedy all the time. Mm. So I quite enjoy doing that.
Yeah. Wow.
It's taking a skill, taking a thing that you enjoy and forcing yourself to do it.
You've wrapped it all back in. That is amazing.
Yeah, but that was weird. Thanks so much for your time.
No probs.
Listening.
Anything you want to say? Like, plug to people?
I'm trying to build up my YouTube channel.
Yeah,
so
right.
Check out my YouTube. Get on YouTube. Just Google.
Is there a piece that you would recommend?
Michael Connell, comedian.
Is there a good opening?
No, I mean, if you've got half an hour, watch my Stoic stand-up special. If not, just watch it. Just subscribe. That's all I need. don't even watch stuff. Just subscribe. That's all I need. Yeah, that's all I want, right?
Because I found, in order to find me, because my name's very common,
yeah,
the easiest way to get to me in particular, there's two sets that directly, like one where I talk about vices that I don't understand. And one more was like my moth storytelling piece. So if people type in Matt Harvey Vices or Matt Harvey Disguises, those are the fastest way to get to my YouTube channel. So is there something that you think might make that a bit more economic?
Well, you know, Bitcoin, Stoic, juggling, and my name.
There you go. Those
are all good. We'll get you anything. But when I Google Michael Connell,
you come up.
I come up.
A baseball player.
There's a baseball player. There's a guy, a whistleblower from the Bush administration, and there's an American pastor guy. There's a couple of Michael Connells, but they're not famous enough that they're ruining my search results.
Well, there's another UK comedian.
Yeah.
And a poet who I have to compete with as well.
Oh, that's not good.
So I've always got to be so I've worked with a lot of Matts in a lot of different jobs, depending on what the hierarchy is. Like, if you were there first, you get to stay as Matt. Whereas if you're second.
So you're like Australian Matt.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. It's Matt H. No, I'm still Matt. No, we've got Matt. You're
already got Matt H. Oh man. Yeah, well, check out my YouTube, please subscribe, and yeah, keep an eye out. I'll be bringing out juggling stuff very soon. There's already a little bit of the juggling stuff, but I've just filmed a bunch of stuff at the Comedy Store and I'm editing it up and I will put that out soon.
All right. Yeah. Nice. That's exciting.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks so much for having me on the show.
No worries. Thanks, man. You made it all the way to the end. Thanks for sticking around. Thanks for listening. I genuinely appreciate all of those of you who are return listeners. If you're new, thanks for taking a chance on us and checking us out. We really appreciate that. If you want to support us, the best way to do that is to come check us out. Come check out our live shows when we do those, and to rate us. If you don't have money to pay for live shows, understand that. Maybe rate us or share us on iTunes or where it is that you listen to your podcasts. Give us a nice review, a nice rating, and share us with a friend. That's really, or just share us on social media, something like that. Someone
will come across us, and then we can keep this show going. You know, I can cover the expenses of traveling around to see these people, and I can get more episodes out frequently, or we can do more. Or maybe I get better audio equipment so that things stop, breaking up while I'm recording. And thanks. Generally, yeah, we're gonna finish up with some more Billie Eilish. I mean, you all know this one, so if you want to listen to it, listen to it. If you don't, you don't. The song's Bad Guy. It's a fun song. It's everywhere. You've heard it. And see you next time. Thanks.
My Invisalign has...
I have taken out my Invisalign.
My Invisalign, and this is the album.
I'm wearing your cologne.